Well, I've had quite the couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't.
There's been a lot. I got a lot to get through.
Just go right into it.
Where to start? Well, let's start at Mario 35. Have you played it yet?
I haven't. I haven't had any time whatsoever in my life.
Yeah, I didn't either because I had to edit like a madman, and I'll talk all about that. Mm-hmm. But I, before I began the marathon of editing, I did get in a few good rounds of Mario 35. And let me tell you something. That's a fine, fine game. That might be my favorite video game of the year, probably.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. And you might say, if you're anything like me, which maybe you are, you probably were like, okay, I get it. It's like a spin on a classic. I get what how Battle Royale works and stuff. But you're like, but really, Super Mario Brothers, that fucking game again? Have I not played that game enough times? Like I've purchased it
probably at least a dozen times.
Yeah, like you've played it so many times, you're starting to actually dislike it, not just be like indifferent to it. This game, what makes it so fun is it completely changes all of the objectives, and really, in that sense, makes it a completely different game.
Oh.
And so, if I could just break it down very, very quickly, you sync up with 35 people, or you're one of 35. You have 35 seconds on the clock, the timer, and it starts counting down. Every time you kill an enemy, you get a second or two or 3 seconds back on the timer, depending on your method of attack. So if it's fireball, which is basically the easiest way to spam, you know, because every time an opponent kills an enemy, the enemy comes over to your screen, or they can send enemies to your screen. So you start to get spammed by enemies. So it becomes a lot more challenging than a standard Super Mario Brothers level, because you could end up with like cheap cheeps or Lakitus in the middle of like 1-1, you know, like you're like, oh, mm-hmm. So if you can get a fire flower pretty rapidly, you can buzz through all that. But the fire flower yields you only 1 second of extra time. But if you hop on an enemy, it yields you 2. And if you do a high hop, like if you really, you know, try to launch yourself off of them, it gives you 3 seconds. And I think Starman gives you 3 seconds per enemy as well. Ah. You're extremely incentivized to find Starman. And obviously, like if you can maintain your fire flower, so it, at least it's an option at all times, that's really the ideal. And when you, especially as the time starts ticking down, or as you're getting down to the final people, if you lose your fire flower, it really is a race to get another fire flower, like as soon as possible.
Now, just question, are the levels remixed at all, or the item locations in the same places, or?
No, it's all the same across the board. The game has been rolling out the available levels to players very, very, very slowly. It's a limited. They're going to get rid of it on March 31st, I guess.
Oh.
But you can play through like the fourth world right now, I think. You level up like any battle royale, and then the higher level you are, then kind of the more of a target you become to other players, because they know that you're more likely to win. I've won lots of battle royales at this point. It turns out like I'm pretty good at Super Mario Brothers. I play the game a lot of times. And the kids aren't as good. They did remix one thing. They changed one mechanic, which was in Mario Brothers 1, when you get, if you have a fire flower and you get hit, you go all the way back down to small.
Right.
This sends you back to just big.
Oh, that is a game changer.
Yeah, that's a big game changer. If you hit the top of the flagpole when you finish a level, that gets you 15 seconds.
Oh,
that's a lot of time. And if you get a redundant fire flower, that's also 15 seconds.
Oh,
so you want to collect redundant fire flowers as well. And then when you get to the end of the level, it randomizes where you go next. So you start to kind of like hope for, and if you go to the, like for instance, in 1-2, if you go to the warp area, you at least get to have, you get 3 random choices for where you can go next.
Okay, I see.
That's kind of handy where you can have a little bit of choice. Because if you end up in like a water level, you're like, fuck, because you know, like,
There's no power-ups or anything.
Yeah, there's no power-ups. And the little octopuses, or the little squids, are deadly, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because you don't They're actually, I don't know if you saw, I think you did, or maybe you linked it to me or something, but some independent game creator developed a Super Mario Brothers Battle Royale earlier this year online that Nintendo took down. And then I think they changed it to like some third party thing or something. But the idea there was, it was you racing against 99 people to speed run. So it was like, get through Mario Brothers as quickly as possible. And you're all competing for items and stuff like that. This is very, very different in that, like, there's really no incentive at all to speed running this. Like, you could go extremely slowly as long as you're killing enough enemies to keep your time up. And then, of course, as the game comes to an end, they speed up the clock and they speed it up and they speed it up to the point that somebody's going to die. Mm-hmm. It's so much so that the game is almost always determined by, like, if you get like a 15-second flagpole, or if you know, like if you kind of can out edge your, if you can really build up enough time on the clock, it doesn't matter how good they are, they're gonna run out of time.
I see.
So it's fun, and it's unlike Tetris 99. I'm really good at Tetris, but unlike Tetris 99, where 99 other people can just send shit your way, and just no matter how good you are, you're just gonna die.
So like, there's more of a skill component to this one.
Way more. Yeah. Like you really can hold on for dear life through this thing. and there's just lots of different ways to think about survivability in the game. I think it's really clever. I think they really, really thought it through. And yet at the end of the day, it still feels like a form of playing that original game, which I also thought was impressive. So, I hope they do it with like Mario 3 or something. Like they could definitely
keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all this limited availability shit is pretty frustrating, but
yeah, I don't understand like Mario All-Stars. They're like, it's going to be available digitally for until this time. It's like, why?
did I confess on this podcast that I bought that game twice?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. That's pretty embarrassing. But I decided I played
a little bit more of Sunshine. I haven't, like I said, I haven't had time. I can tell you what my life is like now. It's just, it's like I wake up at 6:30. I take care of kids until I have to work. And work has just been brutally busy right now. Because we're just trying to like wrap up a bunch of stuff before we
sell.
Before we get sold. And I've just been, it's just, because everyone wants a favor from me. So it's just been busy. And then...
Does the busyness though not necessarily bode well for business? It's just like kind of busy for busy's sake.
I don't know. We'll see. I really have no idea, because all the decisions are going to be made by some shadowy figures in the other company. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't think it's going to really have any. They'll probably just look at my job description, do a yes or no.
Yeah. But the fact is they've been keeping you know, very, very busy. I think you've said, or like, it seems reasonable to assume that your role is the kind of thing that maybe more typically is outsourced, and they've had enough work that they've been like, wait, let's just hire our own guy.
Yeah. It's much cheaper to use me. Much cheaper.
Right.
So yeah, then my lunch break, back before COVID, I used to be able to like do editing during my lunch break. That's not, I have to take care of kids during lunch break. So I never have a break in the day. And then it's back to work. And then after work, you have to make dinner. And then it's like a rush to get everyone to sleep. And lately, my older son, Gabriel, has been going to bed like upwards to 9:30, and it's just been like he's been fighting sleep. So it's like and then after that I have to wash dishes, so it's like then I'm basically done. So that's been my like past 2 weeks.
That sucks, man. I would just go all paper plates at that point. Just fuck this shit.
That is something that I could do, but yeah, even then there's still cleanup to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Even if it was paper plates, because it's not the dishes itself. It's like the pots and pans. You can't get paper pots and pans.
Yeah. Gloria goes to daycare every day, except for on Wednesdays. She goes to Nina's mom's on Wednesdays, just kind of like as a change up visit kind of thing. And first thing in the morning is a little bit of a mad dash with her, because Nina's got to get off to work, and a lot of times, like, Gloria will decide, like, oh, I really want daddy to take me to daycare, which, like, is fine because I'm working from home and I can normally make the trip and get back home for meetings or whatever. But Nina's hospital is literally next door to the daycare. So it's like, come on, man, just let Nina take you. Otherwise, it's like a 45-minute round trip for me. But it's fine. It's nice to get to spend a little time with her in the car. And she's been a little bit kind of hating school lately. She's got put in time out a couple of times for not listening, and she doesn't know why. And so she's just going to school scared. She also got Lyme disease. And that seems to be all settled now because it was interesting. She got this I didn't know much about Lyme disease, but she had this kind of on the side of her face, this like line, this hot rash, like a red rash. And it was I say a line because it wasn't like an inflamed area. It was like kind of like a strip of her face. And my sister's a pediatrician. So we texted the photo to her. And she was like, yeah, you know, that might be Lyme. And my sister has overdiagnosed before. So we're kind of like, wait, what are you talking about? But we Google it. And sure enough, man, this is like every Google image search matched this thing to a T. Sometimes you can kind of be like, oh, I think maybe this thing I saw online was what I have. This was what she had.
Yeah.
And all of the signs too, were like, it didn't hurt, but it was hot and she didn't have symptoms yet. I guess what it is, if I could see under her hair, if she got bit in the ear, it like goes around the ear or something like that, around the infected area. So you just need a 10-day antibiotic for that. And instead of making her go through blood work, which would be pretty unpleasant for her for a 3-year-old, Nina was able to convince the pediatrician to just give us the antibiotics. And my sister was able to kind of help guide us through that process. Then she had to take this, I'm sure with your kids, when you have to administer like liquid medicine, it's like a plunger, you know, like mm-hmm. you kind of stick it in their mouth and what do they call that? Like a, you know,
like a syringe.
A syringe. Yes. Thank you. And I guess it was gross. I mean, I didn't try any myself, but she was like, it's yucky. It's yucky. It's that Nina came up with a brilliant idea, man. And you wouldn't want to do this for too many things. You don't want to bribe your kid into everything, but this sucks. She's got, she got Lyme. And like, so we went to the dollar store and we bought $30 worth of trinkets, toys, baby dolls, My Little Pony, stickers, just all her bullshit. And we put it in a little box. And every time we took out the medicine, we took out the box and said, as soon as you're done with the medicine, you can pick one. And then the next time you do medicine, you'll get to pick another one. And she started, she was like, can I take medicine again, please? And she started collecting things. You know, she's like, oh, I've got this pony. Now I need this pony. And I was like, well, I guess you'll just have to get through the next medicine cycle. It totally worked. There's, I think, one time where she was dreading the medicine too much. And she was like, I don't like toys. You know, fuck toys in that case.
That's basically every attempt I have at bribing. It really ends up like that. He's like, I don't even like candy. And you're like, oh.
Can't buy me. This was pretty, I think it was the element of choice and of like shopping, you know,
that kind of
ended up working. But we got through all 10 days and so that, you know, and then we got to kind of celebrate it with her. It was like, you don't have to take medicine anymore. And on a video game note, I got it in my head. I've been, you know, these arcade one-up cabinets is what is the company. So for those who don't know, it's this company that basically their products are IKEA furniture cabinets for an arcade. They just think of it like a dresser, basically. But it has an LCD screen inside, a Raspberry Pi running a game or two, and control sticks, and the whole thing, the art on the sides are modeled after whatever game it is. Pac-Man, Space Invaders, Centipede, you know, X-Men, Children of the Atom, whatever. They've got lots of them, Street Fighter. And I was always like, oh, that's kind of cool. And they're like a 1/4 scale. So this is only 25% the size of a normal cabinet. Although you can buy, so they're like 4 feet tall. But you actually can buy a 2-foot riser that brings it up to like 6 feet. And they end up being some, you know, in the area of $300 to $400, depending on what the game is. And I thought, oh, that's cool. But I never was tempted to like, oh, I got to have an arcade in my house. Like, I got enough fucking video game. I got a lot of ways to play video games. but when they last year were like, oh, no, we've got the original Ninja Turtles video game. And we put Turtles in Time on it. And the art on the sides is the exact art that you saw in the original cabinet. And if you know what I'm talking about, then you're enthusiastic about this. It's the one where, like, Michelangelo has a yellow bandana for some fucking reason. And April O'Neil is just this lame-looking kind of mom lady in, like, you know, in her stupid rain jacket. And Shredder, most notably, it's just a dude in a Halloween costume. And there's just everything about it screams, like, oh. Like, I don't know about you, EJ. The arcade was always a fun place to go. I'd go for birthday parties and that kind of thing. But I wasn't like one of these guys, you know, I was too young or whatever. I was not in the arcade constantly. Home consoles were always my thing. But there was the occasional time you go to like Pizza Hut or something and they would have Ninja Turtles there. And you just wanted to leave the table forever and just obsess over the video game, let your family eat the pizza. And just like, I just want to vanish into this video game. Can you give me $100? Just pump into this thing. And yeah, they got me, man. But so I've been watching YouTube videos about like the various, you know, like basically the three or four things you can even say about these things. Mm-hmm. And just keep watching the video fantasizing about that. And I kept they were exclusive to Walmart. So I thought, and I swear I'd seen them in Walmart before. Like just big ass boxes over by like the Nintendo area.
Yeah, I definitely seen them.
And I thought like, oh, I'll just like, when I finally feel like it or when there's room in the basement or something, I'll just go pick up an arcade one. You know, I'll pick up the Turtles one at some point in time. And I started like talking to Nina about it not too long ago. I was like, yeah, I'd really like that Turtles arcade game finally. And she's like, yeah, do it, get it. And then I was like, well, the thing is, I would need Mortal Kombat as well.
You think? The thing is,
I can't just have
one. I definitely played a lot of Mortal Kombat in the arcade. But mostly after it came out in Genesis, because I would want to show off at the arcade.
Yes.
It was kind of like a weird thing.
No, I know what you're talking about. It was the one game where in the arcade I was really confident because I had it at home and I got really good.
Yeah, because it was similar enough. And it was definitely
harder the graphics, in the arcade though, right?
Yeah, harder, but it was like, but you'd pull off a fatality and people would be like, oh, that's impressive.
Yeah, well, they have Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and Ultimate 3 in the same cabinet, but the cabinet art is modeled after Mortal Kombat 2.
No.
Which I think is kind of the most iconic one, because that's the one that has like, got like Raiden, you know, across the entire side, like summoning lightning, and it's like a real guy and stuff, and it's just cool looking. But so the time came and I go to the Walmart site and it's out of stock globally, and there's a whole thing. Walmart's weird. John talked about it briefly about Utz cheese balls, very different context, but there's like the Walmart online store and then there's Walmart stores, and you can't like, you have to kind of, what I learned was that if you really want to know what's at your stores versus what's on the online store, you got to download their mobile app. That's the only way you can
figure this out. Yeah, it is confusing because it's kind of like an Amazon-like store.
Yeah, exactly.
If you go to the if you just go online.
They have like an Amazon-style business with the online store. So they go, yeah, there's one at the Swansea Walmart. And I'm like, great. And so I order it that night. And then I'm like, oh, Mortal Kombat's nowhere to be found. Like, it's just not online, not on the internet. And then I found one on eBay. It was my best bet. So I was like, fuck it, I'm doing it. And, you know, it's $300, but then it's like $200 a ship, you know? I'm like, God damn it. But it's like, you'll never get this thing again. Because it looks like they do limited production runs of these things, and then they move on to the next one. Or there's a good chance they'll never, like, start mass producing these ever again. Or if they do, it'll be 5 to 10 years from now. So the next morning, like it was Columbus Day. It was Columbus Day. And we were
Indigenous Peoples Day. Right. Come on.
And we were ready to go to Swansea and go pick it up. And I got this notice. It's like, sorry, we were just kidding.
Well,
it's not here. And they were like, we've credited your debit card. You're sorry. We apologize. Oh, I'm like, dang. And I got like really deflated. I was like, I'm never going to get Ninja Turtles. So I said, fuck it. And I spent also way too much money getting it off of eBay. Now, eBay for that cabinet was like, to get it new, the starting price was like $500. And then like the shipping on top was like an additional like $200. So it was like, God damn, this is going to be like $700 for this stupid toy. I already bought like Mortal Kombat. Like, what am I doing? Like people need money and I'm doing this. And so, but I mean, I paid off my mortgage. So that's the constant, you know, like justification. So I used to spend, $3,200 a month on the mortgage. And that's just gone.
Oh, that's crazy.
This is reavailable. I found there's one seller. It was used. He was selling it for $300 with like $100 for shipping. So it was like $400 all told. And the only thing wrong with it was it's missing the purple ball top for the Donatello controller. And I was like, I'm sure I can find a replacement ball top. And so I did it. And the guy shipped it right out and it was here by Thursday. And assembly was pretty easy. It was they have good instructions on like a YouTube video. They have a nice animation on like IKEA. They have something you can follow really. So it's probably like a 45-minute deal. And Gloria was just going like berserk while I was setting it up. She was just like, is it ready yet? Is it a video game, Daddy? Is it a video game? Can we play a video game? And by the way, she and I have been watching a ton of they have it on YouTube for free. Every episode is the Adventures of Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah, that's the one I liked as a kid. I watched the original Super Mario Super Show, but I knew it was kind of like weird because they'd have like all these movie references in it and stuff like that.
Yeah, they didn't really know what Mario quite was yet.
Yeah,
and so Mario 3 was like very faithful to the Mario 3 game.
Yeah, there was more of the iconography, so I was like, "Oh, that's more what I'm after."
But she loves it too, and she loves the Koopa Kids. If I dare turn on Mario Super Show, she's like, "I want the one with the kids. I want the one with Cootie Pie." All the kids are named different things than they were in the game, and I actually think that the names in the show make way more sense. They're more about their personalities than they are like in the game. They're all named after like musicians.
Yeah,
you know, like Iggy Pop and whatever. So anyway, assembled it really easy, and I also bought an arcade one-up stool that also has the arcade artwork like on a cool, you know, like high, you know, stool like that. I wasn't able to assemble the riser quite yet because it's they didn't ship not all the hardware was there. Like they got little dowels and shit, and they only sent me like half of them. So I'll have to go to a hardware store and buy all that. But we've been playing a ton of it. I made a lot of room in my basement so that there's going to actually be an arcade wall with multiple cabinets. And it's just a blast, man. It's like, I gotta tell you, like, so I play these games lots of times. So I guess like the gameplay itself is a little bit boring, but it's so much more fun for Gloria to sit next to me to handle the same controller as me. Cause it's actually a 4-player console. So even Nina can play too. So like the whole family can each have a controller. So it's very different than you know, this stuff where like, she's holding one, but she doesn't really feel connected to the action. And then also like, I don't know, the controller being part of the screen, it's just a different relationship to the video game, I feel like, where we're sitting really close to it, we're really engaged, and we can like talk about it the whole time. It's just been really fun. And I think it's a brilliant idea, the way they've designed it, because I'm sure the production costs for them is really, really low. And yeah, because we're talking about like a cheap LCD screen, like a 4x3.
Yeah.
That's probably, I'd be shocked if it was, it's probably 480p or something like that.
How does it look? Like, is it just like a, it's fine.
It looks great. The one of the things that's different about this cabinet, I hear from other cabinets that they've made, is they actually have this one ships with a stereo speaker that you install as well. Whereas the other ones, I think the speaker is built into the LCD and it's single channel. So this one has decent sound. there are websites dedicated to modding these things where you can replace it with tripped out speakers, and you can get glow in the dark marquees, and you can replace the artwork entirely with, like, you know, if you want to make your Mortal Kombat 2 cabinet into an Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 cabinet, you can. If you think that the silver screws are too ugly in it, you can replace them with black screw. Like, you can, and of course you can replace the actual innards with a Raspberry Pi and, you know, play a trillion games or something like that. But I don't know. I think that it's kind of fun to walk up to the Turtles cabinet and play Turtles.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's what my hang up of getting like a MAME cabinet was. Yeah. Like, I want it to be the thing.
Yeah, you end up devaluing it if there is a weird psychology thing, in my opinion, of like, it's like Netflix. It's like, if you have 1,000 games, you might as well have 0 games.
Yeah. And that's the reason why, you know, I love having carts of mm-hmm. my mm-hmm. favorite games and playing the carts.
Totally.
And just slamming them into the console.
I would make the same argument about physical media. I've always said, like, you know, when we've made feature films, the people who buy the Blu-ray for our feature films, they pop that in and they watch the movie.
Yeah.
The people who know
they send us pictures of it.
Yeah, right. The people who know that it's available on, you know, digital or whatever, it's like they don't necessarily get around to doing that. Like, if they put it on Plex, like, you know, it's like, okay, man, I'll watch that sometime. You know, there's something about, like, I made an investment and now I'm gonna value that investment. But it's been great, and I look forward to Mortal Kombat coming in. Now my imagination's running wild about, like, I don't know. I feel like now I need some, like, snacks, like some, like, standard arcade snacks that, like, always stocked down here, maybe on a shelf or something. But it's, oh, you know what else? One quick thing. Etsy, you know, the website Etsy that has, yes, like, you know, people make crafts and shit. There's a lot of artists on there who have made cool custom things for these. So, like, for instance, I bought these acrylic toppers for both cabinets. So you can slide it into the top, and it's like a big advertisement that says, like, two adventures in one. And it's like Ninja Turtles 80s art, or like the Mortal Kombat one shows the whole, like, roster of characters and, like, all their bios, you know?
Oh, that's cool.
And then they also make dust covers for the controllers. So there's, like, a, you know, that area where dust can collect. Somebody made, like, pizza ones, circular pizza ones that I bought for this. So it's a ton of fun. There's, like, there's a Reddit that I didn't know existed, that a whole community around, like, making cool arcade mods and shit like that. But I don't know. It's been a blast.
We did get sent a question. Maybe we should.
Yes, I have that in my list of to-dos.
Yeah. So if you want to ask us a question, feel free to comment on Patreon, or just send us an email and we'll respond to it.
Yeah, there's really only one person who engages. I know that more than one person listens to this podcast, but there's really only one person who engages, and that is our friend Mike Buchan from, I believe, Australia. So he says, love the origin story for this year's Halloween content. Really builds up the anticipation. I'm going to talk more about the Halloween content in a moment. He says, alcoholic pear cider was huge in this part of the world some years ago now. Surprised it isn't something that's common over there, even in a non-alcoholic style. As for questions, I'd love to know from both of you, what content have you produced so far that has been significantly less or more popular than you expected? So have you had a piece of content where you're like, man, I really thought this was going to hit and it didn't, or the opposite?
I would say it's the same content. It would be the Game of Thrones reviews because I didn't think it was going to hit. And there was that one episode that really did, like the whatever one that was, but it blew up my phone when all of a sudden, like, it went kind of like semi-viral. It didn't get too much. I forget.
Every time that happens, it's because some beautiful soul out there decided to post it in a place where other people noticed.
Yeah. But
well-placed Reddit posts.
So that did better than I expected. And then after that, I was like, it's not that I expected it to maintain that high level. I expected some more returns, but it never happened. So it
like dropped off. Yeah.
Yeah. So that, and it kind of discouraged me from even making them in the future. Because I was just like, these are way too much work. Game of Thrones is not really that much fun anymore, and making commentary on media is not that fun anymore.
Have you ever consider that like YouTube content, even the stuff that doesn't hit, like it's nice to have the archive of where somebody who discovers you newly can go back and enjoy like you know multiple seasons of EJ Game of Thrones reviews, and it'll always be there, you know. It's like even though you're not incentivized to continue, you know, it gets to be sort of part of your content legacy in a cool way.
Yeah. But in the end, yeah, it didn't hit again after that. So that would be my answer is Game of Thrones did better and worse than I thought.
I guess for me, well, I haven't been able to do much of anything with Till Death Do Us Part. That's been like a really... yeah, I don't know. I feel like that movie should have some life to it that it hasn't quite been able to have, even if only through our fans, but you know, like they've only seen it through streams and stuff. So I guess I feel like if I put it up for free tomorrow, it wouldn't even get the views of like what one Boxmack episode gets.
No.
So there's that, I guess, but I would say I was actually really surprised by how, enthusiastic people were about Pewter Smith.
Oh yeah,
I thought that was gonna fall flat. I wouldn't care if it did. I know that there's enough people like the Patreon types who are just interested in what we're interested in. They're kind of here for us and stuff. And knowing that they're out there incentivizes me to make content of all kinds. But yeah, I thought we'd hover around the 400 mark or some shit like that, and that it would be a show that I make infrequently or something. But no, it topped. I think it was in the 1500 or so, but the comments were like overwhelmingly enthusiastic. Like people were really, really enthused about it.
Yeah, I enjoyed the content. And I thought when I saw it, I was like, this could be a thing. Like this could be a thing. Like this could be its own channel, I thought, but
yeah, for sure. But, and I hear there's a lot of content like that on YouTube.
Yeah, there's a lot of content, and people like it. It's almost like a sister of like ASMR, you know, like
right.
It's comforting,
yeah,
to see somebody just go through a task,
which is like, you know, admittedly not the kind of content I'm interested in producing. Like, yeah. I don't want to just make like autism the channel, you know, like I want to entertain people. I want to be interesting. I want to, you know, have dynamic characters and like, I want to present you something you don't see on YouTube normally and that you're happy to see. That's why we turned Boxmack into something of a playground for that kind of content. But I did very much enjoy shooting it, and I do think it's interesting, and I do think John's a dynamic character. So all of the things that make it fun for me to make are there. And then if people just find it cool to watch, then great. And I do think like the 80s styling that I did, that somehow excites me to continue and to see what else I can do with that.
Yeah, I would be excited to see more.
Yeah. I guess that's the success one, but the... you know, I feel like Junt Snass is another one where I'm like, it did fine. You know, it wasn't like it wasn't no views for God's sakes. You know, Jesus, like nobody's interested in this at all. But that one really felt to me like there's no reason this shouldn't be very successful. You know, and
just because there's a glut of video game content. And I think there people are used to a certain tempo with video game content. And I feel like Junt Snass was sort of different. You know, it was a little bit because of the three characters almost and like the more of a lounge setting. Instead of the direct to the camera, like, oh, I've got a personality and I'm going to tell you about the Sega CD. And you're just like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, we've intentionally tried to make it kind of stand out from the pack. And I think the people who liked it, loved it. That seems to be the case. Although do you remember that one fan? I don't know if he was like, he really hated Junt's Nest for some reason. We occasionally will get people who berate us for not just making the thing they like. And sometimes there's this one dude that's named like 1234567 is his handle. And he likes Glitter Bitches and Junt Marone Outdoors. And I thought for sure he's a troll. I mean, that's just fucking ridiculous. But no, like, this is how he honestly feels. He's given you shit. He's been like that feeling when EJ uploads and it, you know, we wish it was Glitter Bitches or something. And recently, like, I posted the announcement about the festival and he was like, Frankie's non-Boxmac voice is cringe.
I saw that comment.
I don't have a non-Boxmac voice. I have my voice only. very, 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 very strange. But yeah, he's got his shows that he likes and, weird when you have somebody who actually is a faithful viewer of everything that you make, but who also hates on you regularly.
Yeah, well, that's isn't that the people who love you hate on you the most?
Yeah, it's not like me with Star Wars, basically. Yeah, is that like what I'm accused of? But Star Wars really does overwhelmingly suck.
It's true. There's like more bad Star Wars than good Star Wars at this point.
Have you ever had there was a podcast I had that I used to listen to where I remember catching myself where like they would do something that I thought was really boring or really just shitty that kind of made me want to unsubscribe. And I was tempted to tweet about it or say, I never did. But then I was like, well, you never say anything, you know, you've loved 95% of what these guys have done. You never say anything nice about it. You know, like, so it's the old thing of like, you silently, you know, and selfishly enjoy everything, but then like if you don't like something, that's when you pipe up. I think people do need to remember that, like, especially channels like ours, like there's no sponsorships, there's no fucking, you know, there's a little bit of Patreon, which is nice, but there's no money in this. These are hobbyists to have day jobs, like trying, you know, like you're getting free fucking entertainment here instead of having to pay for a cable package. Yeah. you get to watch like citizens entertain you.
Citizens just do this in their spare time. And,
like I'm not a public figure. You know, like I'm a guy in Massachusetts. Like, give me a break. You're flat. Like, Jesus, fuck off. You know, I'm working on it. speaking of which, good segue. So Halloween this year falls on a Saturday, right? No. Yes, it falls.
Yes, it does.
And so November 1st is a Sunday. So I didn't have. Well, we have some backlog content, the Utes Cheeseball stuff, and all that stuff that we shot. But I was like, it would be nice to shoot something kind of Halloween, post something Halloween adjacent for the first. And normally we do Gloria's costume with my mom and stuff, but basically two things threw a wrench in that this year, which was one was Gloria wanted to be a witch again. Kind of boring.
Still does.
Yeah. And two was that my mom like doesn't want to go to like Joann Fabrics and do like the shopping video thing. But on the other hand, my dad was making a cool Jack Skellington styled scarecrow.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, hey, like, do you want to like look at it and do a video about it and maybe Gloria can help like paint it or whatever? And I was like, yeah, okay. So we started shooting that, and then he had like another craft we were looking at, and then my mom was like, well, I'll make her a fresh witch costume. It's like more her size now because she's grown for a year. And so my mom got like glow in the dark fabric, so it's like this cool kind of enhanced version of the costume, like, you know, like leveled up. But I'm not sure there's a video here still. And then I started to run, as I've been talking about on the pod, and I'm capable of running a 5K, and I've run 4 miles at this point. And lately, like the last like 2 weeks since we last spoke, I've really like upped my running game. Like I basically work out 4 times a day.
Wow.
I do a half hour on the elliptical, then I run a mile. Then at noon, I do a half hour on the elliptical, then I run another mile. And you know, I'm still, you know, in the 200, so I'm a bigger guy, but I can run like a 920 mile. And so I can like run, I can run pretty good. I can run pretty comfortably too. And so I was like, well, wouldn't it be cool with these fitness advances I've been making, if this year, instead of saying, oh, we can't do the road race because of COVID, what if I ran the course? Like, I'll run the course, and that will be, and I'll get in a costume, and, you know, Gloria will get in her costume. We'll do it like, you know, kind of as a fuck you to COVID in a way, you know what I mean? kind of as like, I'm not going to like not, especially like in this year where I'm actually capable of fitness, like I'm going to do
it. Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, cause in the previous years, I just had to watch my mom do it while like my fat ass like watched. And, so tomorrow morning, it looks like my dad's going to join me too, which is a little awkward. we're going to go for a 5K race, and we're going to film it. And it's going to be part of kind of a larger, you know, Frame Family Halloween video that's going to drop on the 1st, because the special drops on the 25th.
Yeah. So that's we should talk about the edit of the special. It's glorious. It's great.
Yeah. So we talked at length about the shooting and how much fun we had doing that. And then, you know, even though that went well and stuff, and like it went great, and I saw some of the footage and I knew that we had something there, I still didn't know if, because the thing is we came up with the Food Network idea the night before, and I didn't know if we, especially since we shot Pirate Pizza Review and like no views that same day, like we were fitting in like a big shoot. Normally a big shoot like that, like the Halloween special, would just be a dedicated thing.
Yeah.
So I didn't, and not to mention like, you're going to parody the Food Network, but like, you don't have a show kitchen. You don't have, like, you can't make it look like a Food Network show. We're shooting like some of the host segments in John's dumpy yard. He was taking it up to the yard where Gloria got Lyme disease. And and so I just didn't know. I was like, this whole thing is going to end up having to be made in the edit, basically. I mean, well, you had some great footage. Like, the interview footage looked amazing, and the slow-mo was super helpful, and I think like John's like Southern performance is really funny. And so like, there was lots there, but it was like, it's gonna, you know, you gotta make it in the edit.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, I think, like I said on the last pod, those reality shows are all post-production. Like
they're fabrications.
Yeah, exactly. Every contrived moment, every revelation, like they're all contrived in post.
A sound sting and everything. Right.
Especially for like the more vapid shows, like, you know, like Hugh Hefner's fucking Girlfriends, the reality show or whatever. Like, those are all, you know, they don't know how to perform for the camera. So it's just all post-production. So I think I talked about last time. It was like, okay, well, I got to edit no views first, because that comes out first. Because you got to like nail all the Sundays in the month. So I focused on that. And then I did Pirate Pizza Review that same week. So like in the first week of October, bang, I've got 2 weeks done. But we normally like Pirate Pizza Review to be the week before. That's always been the tradition. It's
the tradition you made up.
Yeah, the tradition I made up. But now it's like 5 years strong. That's the 5th Pirate Pizza Review. It comes out the week before the special, and there's a little tease at the end of every Pirate Pizza Review that is the reveal of what the thing's going to be. And I want that to be the week before. So then we shot the snack video 2 weeks ago. And now basically, in order for that to drop to allow Pirate Pizza Review to be the following week, I had to edit that in the same week. So I pulled a lot of late nights to get that done. That ended up being a really challenging one to edit. I think we shot that actually after you and I spoke last time on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We had Matt there, and it went, actually Matt was pretty funny on it. And I, he showed up as Captain, you know, dumpy Captain America and stuff. The whole thing was fun, but it was also like a shooting challenge kind of predictably, you know. I actually found, by the way, I'm using now the Magic Bullet suite from Red Giant. You know, they always have the best fucking.
Oh yeah. They have good stuff.
And they have a denoiser, like a, you know, if there's video noise at all in your, which there was, cause I set the ISO wrong with the harsh lighting and everything. I was using some auto settings but I was also lighting. It's, yeah, that thing knocks that out. Like, if you just apply it, there's no more video noise.
Yeah, I have one. It's like neat video, and it's magical. It's magical the way it does. Yeah. I don't know what it does. I don't know how it does it. I don't know why it does it.
It's
but
some
it does.
AI stuff.
That's
why it costs so much money. Yeah, because it's like I think the Magic Bullet Suite is like $600 a year, which I totally pay. I kind of talked myself into like, hey, if you can nail editing that and releasing that same week, then what you've done is you've bought yourself 2 weeks to make sure that the special is done, because the special is going to require a lot of your editing attention and time. And yeah, it was really intimidating, because there's also like, the task was to balance a standard Box Mac episode with this new reality show format. So what I ended up, and the thing I was like most enthusiastic to edit was all the kind of stylized stuff, because I knew that was going to be where the fun was and where all the entertainment was going to be. But what I realized quickly was like, well, you're not going to know how to pepper in the style without having the skeleton of the show first. So I decided to edit it like a standard Box Mac, like just act like we're not really doing the reality show thing, you know, to the extent that I know, like, oh, okay, this is probably where I'm going to do like that commercial break. This is probably where there'll be some kind of music sting or something, you know, leave a little bit of like space in the edit to remind myself of those ideas, but basically just edit it normal. And then that'll familiarize me with the content. And then when I'm all done, create the opening, create the intro, create the judges segment, and pepper in the interviews and do it that way. And that was really effective. But it took, I think for 4 or 5 nights in a row, including last night, because there's a lot of like, I was finished Friday night, but there's always like a lot of after shit I have to do, from the Mac database to uploading it to Daily Motion to organizing all the data to getting it on the website. There's just like all like, there's kind of a big punch list whenever we
I know it,
doing the applications. Yeah, so I was doing all that, but I've been up until 1 a.m. for 5 days in a row, and I'm like, as I speak to you now, I'm like, I'm fucking exhausted, and I gotta run the 5k in the morning. but it was, I guess, worth it, because now I have a week of lead time, and I can kind of figure out this, this 5K frame family video too, which I think it will be cool. I can really focus on that for actually 2 weeks, and I can kind of fit in, like next weekend my sister's coming down and stuff, so I can like kind of like be present for that and not be focused on like content releases. I have a little bit of my own Halloween fun, basically.
Right.
I think it was like the second or third night that I was editing it when it started to really come together. And I had, most importantly, I had the opening. The opening is like what sets the mood, you know, that's the test of like, if, you know, cause Nina's our host and stuff. And how does that interplay? And does it all feel like one thing? Does it actually feel like a proper parody of the thing? Or does it feel like normal Box Mac with just kind of us acknowledging that, you know, I want it to be almost indistinguishable from something you might see on TV. that's what I was really going
for. It does in a way, even because we shot it in 30p instead of 24p.
You did an awesome job. Yeah.
And like you could tell, like I was like, oh, I can tell that this is like more TV.
Yeah, it tells your brain, like, you know, you don't have to pay full attention to this. There you go. This went through like the edit-o-matic. But it actually gave me appreciation for the people who edit those things, because it's not just like switching between multicam or something. It's you have to fashion all like, their post-production team at the Food Network must be really intense. Like,
oh,
they
must
do
be.
Nothing but you know, because I don't know, how long does it take to edit an episode of Halloween Baking Championship? It probably takes 20 hours at least or something.
Yeah.
I've been wondering, if does Premiere keep track of the amount of hours of activity you have in a project?
If it does, I don't know.
I would love to do like a big analysis of like editing times.
Yeah, maybe you might have to like get a timer.
Do my own thing, yeah.
Do a speed run timer.
I think it's 4 or 5 hours about. Per episode if I'm moving quick and if everything's going normally. So when I sort of had it working and it was like starting to crack me up, and there's all the cheesy Halloween sound effects peppered in through, you know, Nina's performance was really working, and the Southern accents in our interview weren't just so WTF that it didn't work. You're like, no, it actually, like, you could understand why we were doing it. It felt like we were parodying stupid participants on these things.
It cracks me up every time I think about it.
I went to
bed. Especially John's performance.
Yeah, he's like pissed off for some reason. I love, he says it one, he's like, he says it, me and Frankie have been quite a pair. for some reason, the choice of the word pair just really gets me. But I actually went to bed giddy, which is, I have to say, that's probably the first time I've felt that way since like Boxdemic, where I went to bed like actually unable to sleep because I was so excited about how well it was coming out and about all like the opportunities I was going to have to like improve it for the next several days and to really make it. So yeah, it was that Christmas morning feeling of like, oh, like I can't sleep because I want to wake up and go work on it more.
Wow.
Which is something that, like, you know, you don't always feel that way.
Yeah. I have a question. So there's a lot of like Halloween-y animations in there. Is that something you pulled off YouTube? Is that something you bought? What was that?
So there's the actual logo. The Halloween, it says Halloween Macaroni and Cheese Championship. That's just a motion graphic on a Google image searched background of pumpkins. The actual logo, I stole the template from Target's Hyde and Eek food brand, which we
referenced. Oh.
I stole that, and then I replaced that with words. And the font is the Tales from the Crypt font. And then I found this on YouTube. It's called like Demon Bats Flying at the Camera, and it's on a green screen. And so I stole that from YouTube and added bats to it. It's just a couple of Premiere Motion graphics of logos and then bats is all it is. And there's a lot of reality show music on YouTube that I pulled. Tons of it, actually. You know, like Winner Takes It All and like Sneaking In Late. And you know, like, and they're all oddly, tons of them are, first of all, they're recognizable from real reality TV because it's all this uncopyrighted stuff. Second of all, they're all this dude, Kevin MacLeod,
all the YouTube music.
Yeah, he does all the Halloween stuff that we've used. Like, this guy, it turns out, is like the king of not making money off of music. Yeah, all the best music for it. It's the weirdest thing.
That's so funny.
So that was that. And then the lightning. So like there is, I ripped an episode of Halloween Baking Championship and I kind of used that as the way I kind of just to like get my own cadence for how it was going to be edited is I literally just laid that down. And every time they did a cut, I did a cut. if they had a contestant being like, you know, like it's burning or whatever, like I would cut to like John instead doing some equivalent. And yeah, they had this transition where lightning would crack, there'd be like some white flashes and like a Halloween illustration, you know, just to give you the mood, and then it would move on. And I like almost immediately was like, that lightning, that little lightning transition, that gets you 95% of the way through this thing. Like, because it resets your brain in the way that it needs to. And but I actually stole theirs. It's like a picture of like a haunted house.
Some
trees. It's just for like two or three frames. And I just stole theirs. But the lightning sound is one that I got elsewhere. So One of my favorite things in it, and I'm really trying not to spoil too much of this, but when we were shooting the box Mac, we decided that we were going to fabricate some disaster. I didn't even know what it was going to be. John told me, he was like, "Hey, in like 5 minutes, I'm going to fabricate a disaster." And, it was that his spoon was wet, so he couldn't knock the fucking flour off of it. And it was the perfect thing for like, oh no, this might destroy us. Cut to commercial, like cliffhanger. He can't get the flour off the spoon. But the thing that I was like hell bent on was all of those shows, they set up some disaster before commercial. And when they come back from commercial, they almost forget that they had a conflict. They set up the conflict very rapidly. They resolve it extremely rapidly and they just move on.
I noticed that and I loved it.
Yeah. So I decided like ours had to do that. Like where he was just like, oh, this moon's fine. And then like happy music plays and like just the episode. And then like, I'm talking about like, if I win this competition, I'm going to buy a mac and cheese store or whatever.
Mama, brother.
Mama. Yeah. So I was thinking about, of all of our Halloween specials, all of which at this point I can still confidently say I love and cherish all of them. I think the way I would rank it for me, my personal picks would be in last place, and not to say anything bad about it, I still think it's a great special. But last place would be Pfalzgraf. Second, so six would be Pfalzgraf. Five would be Tales from the Craft. Four would probably be Massacre at the Junt Place. I think three would be Halloween Mac Championship. Two would be, for me, Max Free Science Theater, and one would be Boxdemic. Boxdemic, my favorite.
I think it's one of the funniest. Like, yeah. Just, it's got a lot of the most memorable, funny moments.
It's so bonkers. It's probably not every... I mean, even if you know the movie, which a lot of people don't, so I'm sure like that's also like a barrier. But I for me, like things that are just completely off the wall are just always going to be funnier. Even if there's not really much of a reference point. But, you know, while I was editing the Mac Championship thing, I realized something about myself that has been common in my work, which is when parodying something, well, we all know, like, the principles of parodying, of parody, is that you take the thing and then you exaggerate it. And you exaggerate, you know, if you're writing an Onion article, you take kind of something that's framed in reality and then you exaggerate it to a point where it's ludicrous. And that exposes some truth about the base thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like that if you kept going to the you know, an unreasonable conclusion, like you would reach this. So when I parody something, it's a similar principle. You exaggerate something real. I like to only exaggerate it by like 7%.
It's true. I feel like we almost like the Max Free Science Theater is almost like that's just it's just almost there.
I was telling Nina this last night and she was like, that's very like Christopher Guest of you. And I was like, that's a really good point. In fact, like I wonder if I kind of got it from him because I idolize him. And it's like, yeah, he like it's to the point where it's like, well, isn't this just a rock band? I mean, they're saying funny shit, but like, you did write all of this real music, and it's decent music, and you know, you're really
yeah, exactly.
You're really performing it, and you know, some people have thought this is a real documentary. I remember actually, do you like Best in Show, the dog show movie?
I don't think I've seen it. I've held the DVD in my hands, but never watched it. But I've seen Spinal Tap, of course.
Yeah, Spinal Tap's great. Maybe the same is true of Spinal Tap. I feel like I remember the first time I saw a Best in Show. I'd never seen anything like it. This kind of mockumentary with character actors that were semi-famous, but not enough that you're like, oh, this is clearly a movie. I remember I watched like 10 minutes of it, not laughing. Not knowing what the fuck I was watching, knowing that it existed somewhere between reality and fiction. And then I remember after those 10 minutes thinking it was the funniest goddamn thing I'd ever seen. You know, like, just like, this is okay, this is brilliant. Like, there's the Folksmen, you know, it's the Spinal Tap guys, but they play folk music. They do a song called Blood on the Coals, and I think it's one of the funniest parody songs I've ever heard, because there's almost nothing comedic about it. It's almost just a standard folk song, but the premise, if you listen and if you summarize it, you realize how funny it is, which is, it's about a coal mining accident and a train crash. It's about a train crashing into a coal mine, which is hat on a hat. It's too ridiculous of an accident for it to be melodramatic.
Oh yeah, it's
brilliant. But it's presented like this horrible, you know, in the year of 91, there was this terrible coal mining train accident. And yeah, so I just love shit like that. It's not to say that like Halloween Mac Championship is like subtle parody or something, but I just especially in the treatment of the post-production of it, I want your brain to get lost in the format, like where the format is so familiar to you, you forget to laugh for a minute and then you remember to laugh and it's super funny. That's kind of what I'm going for.
Yeah, I think we go for that with every Halloween, where we try to, I mean, to the format of, you know, the frame of the video or the frame rate itself, to, yeah, the sets, to the lensing. We always think about like how you would accomplish,
yes,
that feel, you know.
And it's always super cool. Like, I always am really confident that like, you know what we're going for too in what you're shooting, but like it's always reinforced when I'm watching the dailies. Like, there was the shot of he and I like folding our arms simultaneously, and your initial setup was just kind of a two shot and it would have worked, but then like you quickly realize like, oh, you like, this has to start, like you changed the framing and changed the motion of the camera to make it even more kind of like derivative of that style. Like, it's a style that you're obviously familiar with, and you knew how to make it funnier. And it's cool that like
tell a story. Yeah.
It's cool that we don't, like, well, as I always say, like, we didn't have to like sit there deliberating about that sort of stuff, you know, for very long. We just kind of start, you know, and yeah, Nina too, like, she knows what makes those hosts funny. Yeah, she, everybody, or even like if you watch the outtakes, if there is going to be outtakes, we're throwing to John, like, you grew up on a farm, you know, or like, what's wrong with Frankie right now? You know, we're just throwing out these little ideas and he goes, oh, yeah, okay. And he knows exactly what to say. Like, I, you know, so everybody knows what we're trying to accomplish. And it was, especially for a thing that, again, there was little to no discussion about what we were doing. I recorded a 1-minute video and put it on Slack to be like, oh, hey, tomorrow we're doing this instead.
Yeah, and we all, like, we're on the same page and we got it done.
Yeah, we're like, oh, we know what that joke is. Let's do that joke. So that's just really, really satisfying that we can. And it's what, you know, even though we bitch every year about like, oh, we're going to do this fucking Halloween special, lose my whole fall over this thing. It's always worth doing because you make some creative discovery that's almost not possible without the time crunch.
Yeah.
I remember Nina actually on the day of, after we shot, she, you know, cause like this is her hosting it, you know, in a sleeveless dress with a stupid hat, you know, like it's more than she's always willing to be in the content, but it was asking more of her than she normally gives. It was like, you're going to really perform in this thing. And, you know, probably more so than she had since like Sexually Frank. Mm-hmm. And she, at the end of it, she was like, can you make sure in the edit that I don't come off like those shitty, like Nostalgia Critic girls? you know like on, yes, like Channel Awesome, like they, whoever his like female friends are, they always just come off really poorly. Can you make sure that doesn't happen to me? And I obviously thought she came out great, but the real test is whether or not she feels good about it. And I asked her, I was like, are you happy with your performance? She's like, oh yeah, this came out great.
That's good. I'm glad we can all make Nina look good.
It's cool too that we were able to make a special that, you know, because the original idea for the very first Halloween special was like, let's deviate from Box Mac a lot. Let's leave Box Mac, you know, in this freakish way. And now it's kind of cool to be like, oh, let's just like evolve Box Mac into a parody show.
It's taking Box Mac and actually making it into the thing that we're kind of quote unquote competing against.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. It's like, yeah, if we could be another cooking show, we could be this show.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is cool. It was really, really very satisfying. And I'm now, with the exception of this road race video, I have a clear idea of what the whole Halloween lineup is, and I think it was a great year.
Yeah, I think so too. And I filmed pumpkin spice ribs.
Yes, how's that going?
I don't think I.
You Instagrammed it.
Yeah, it's interesting. So what I did is I got this a beer can chicken roaster, and it has like a little like cup in the middle where you'd pour beer into, and then it's designed so you'd put a chicken on it.
Yep.
And for some reason I was like, hey, what if I wrapped ribs around the cup and made like a barbecue sauce in the middle, you know?
Fascinating.
That's kind of like a weird thing. So I wrapped the ribs around it, and I have a couple gags about that, but I won't spoil them here. But so yeah, it's going to be beer can ribs, and I'm going to make a barbecue sauce with beer in the middle.
Wow.
And I already did. I filmed it. I just have to write a script for it. I will spoil it. They taste exactly like pumpkin spice, like a pumpkin spice coffee from.
That's crazy.
But it's not.
It goes with.
It's not exactly appetizing, but I nailed the flavor, and I nailed the pumpkin-y, fall-y flavor. It was actually kind of surprising. So it's going to be interesting.
Turns out that like pumpkin spice doesn't go on everything.
Yeah, it's like if you had pumpkin spice Doritos, you'd
right, exactly.
You know they nailed the flavor, but you wouldn't want.
I wonder how that pumpkin spice KD is.
Yeah, and none of our fans, I think, won that contest, so I don't think we're gonna get it.
Yeah, we did as part of the special. There's like basically a little commercial break, and we try these Halloween themed cheeses that from Aldi, which was just a serendipitous discovery. We were shopping for the pantry that John used to make the Harvest Mac, and then we found these cheeses that were encased in like a pumpkin wax and like a bat wax and stuff, and we were like, oh, we could pick these up and maybe like review these when the Mac is baking or something. And it ended up being a pretty cool little like short segment, and it was apropos, and it was just fun. It was a cool excuse to do something a little bit, you know, deviated.
I like
the runtime to be at least double what a standard episode would be, you know.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. Yeah, it was fun to test cheeses with you guys.
That was
even cool. Just off camera, it was fun.
Yeah, I actually went to Aldi a few hours ago in search of those same cheeses because I wanted to try the Wensleydale again. And Aldi, you can't rely on that fucking store for anything.
No, it's always changing. I went there, yeah, for like some meats, and I assumed they would have those meats again, but then they had a bunch of different fucking meats. Yeah. they just have what they have, and you kind of have to deal with it. It's kind of annoying to do it as your main store because you can't rely on it.
Yeah, no, totally.
It has to be a supplementary store, and I can't afford two trips, you know?
It's like that family foods place that John goes to. It's like, this is, Aldi might be a fun store, but it's not a real store.
Yeah, it's a supplemental store if you want to do that. But I'd rather pay more and get everything that I want.
Yeah, because otherwise I'm going to end up paying more by going to two places.
Yeah, the time is money to me. So
right. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, on the top. We spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about how busy we are and how we're trying to fit stuff in, and like there's a lot of like, we talk about time management a lot.
Well, you know,
because it's a big part of our lives.
It's a huge part of our
life. Yeah. So there's this ultrathon athlete that people probably are aware of, especially if you listen to the Joe Rogan podcast, because he's been on there a few times. His name is David Goggins. And for those who don't know, just very quickly, he's like a fitness psychopath. Like he I guess at one point, you know, say he was abused as a child is like kind of part of the story. And he was like 297 at one point. So he's really fat. And he actually lost a ton of weight and then gained it back too. So he had to lose it again. But his whole thing is that he's an ultrathoner. One of his claims to fame is he did 8 100 mile races in 8 weekends. And now he does like 240 mile runs, you know, in the middle of the desert, you know, one of those guys. Mm-hmm. He has the pull-up record. He did 4,500 or so pull-ups in 17 hours. Just insane. I mean, he weighs like 190 pounds. So he can run with ultra athletes and he can lift with power athletes. It's just crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But I actually saw his fitness regimen, and it's, you know, it's like 15 hours of exercise a day or something. And not a tremendous amount of food either. So like, now if you listen to him, all he really talks about is like how suffering is an extremely important part of life, basically. Like he's not selling a bill of goods of like, with just a few adjustments, you know? No, it's just like... he's like, no, you have to,
you go. Can drink this milkshake.
Yeah. Like just a few small changes.
Those women in my Facebook feed.
Yeah, right.
He's trying to sell you a pyramid scheme.
Exactly. Yeah, he what he's selling you is that if you don't make sure to suffer every day, if you don't make sure to do something that sucks once a day at least, that you're going to lose your life. You're going to lose your resiliency, you're going to lose your mental strength, your mental toughness. Like he's bought into that he's essentially self-abusing. I mean, I think the alternative is a lot worse, but I do think he's kind of self-abusive in a way that's not really that helpful. But I think there is wisdom in the story of a guy like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly the idea of, you know, sometimes you're in the middle of a struggle and you're like, well, it's okay, because there's going to be like an end and then I'm going to get to relax. And so I'll, you know, this is deferred happiness. This is just like, you know, I'm sophisticated enough to know that life is not about immediate gratification.
Right.
I'm going to stay up for 5 nights in a row, edit this awesome thing, and then be very rewarded by the video, as though that's like the big goal. But in reality, we know that that's not really the big goal. It'll drop and people will like it, and we will get some reward from that, but we're going to move on to the next project very quickly.
we have to start planning the Christmas special.
Right. We're going to be, you know, all of our negative and positive emotion will be completely invested in that future goal, instead of like, oh, like I'm still reaping the rewards of the past achievement, you know? And so he talks about like, there's no finish line is the way he puts it. Like you need to actually abandon in life the idea of a finish line. Like don't concern yourself with like doing things for the reward of doing the thing. He's more preaching like, no, it's just important. It's just important that you live a life of pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
In the, you know, the pursuit is the reward. And I think that is, you know, that there's some comfort and there's some wisdom in that. You know, if you ever are sitting there wondering like, why am I doing this to myself? Like what the, it's like, well, because you have a, because you know, because you have something that is, that you're deeply invested in, something you have a reason for living. That's why, yeah. You know, like there's no such thing as like, you know, like one day I'll retire from my job. There's no, you know, you don't want that.
Yeah. Well, it's like the thing where people who retire just like die really quickly.
Right.
It's because they like have this huge purpose in their life taken away, you know, right. And they just start to deteriorate.
And I don't think he's playing the fitness game. I mean, obviously fitness is huge in his life, but I think the fitness is just a manifestation of this kind of religious concept that he has, which is that we have to hurt. And it's important that we hurt. It's an interesting idea. And that you actually need to impose the hurt on yourself and never lose it.
Never stop.
You know, like to make it more related to fitness, since that's been a big part of my life. You know, we know what happens when you're like, you know what I'll do? Not exercise and eat whatever is most pleasurable to me. Or you know what I'll do is I won't wake up early and make sure to exercise. You know,
like, yeah,
we know where that leads. And
yeah,
so he's for instance, he doesn't do recovery days at all. He works out every single day. There's no recovery. And he says, you know, like when he talks to people, their first question is like, but when do you recover? You know, in other words, his assessment of that is that they're already focused on like, how do I get out of this?
Yeah.
it can't be true that I have to actually hurt myself that much. It's like, oh, you gotta hurt. You gotta hurt.
But when do I sleep and be comfy?
Yeah, it's like, well, maybe you need to start making peace with discomfort completely.
Yeah, I do think there's wisdom in that. And of course, I'd more steer on the side of moderation than...
Right. There's kind of a Christianity thing there, I think, too. You know, this idea of this guy who is like, well, I'm going to have to suffer for... You know, something.
Yeah. Suffer. Life is suffering, and
right.
Better make peace with it.
I probably in every major wisdom, in every major religion, you can find some form of talking about suffering as a virtue.
Yeah. Well, and not to say that having kids is suffering, but it's like people who have kids versus people who don't have kids.
I think that's a perfect analogy. Yeah.
Where. Yeah, they have like more free time, but like, is their life more meaningful? Maybe, maybe not.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, well, like, if your argument is like, well, I really shouldn't have kids because, boy, does that seem like a lot of hard work. If that's your reasoning, like, I think some people, everybody thinks that. Spoiler alert: everybody's like, oh Jesus, that's going to be hard. And I think some people think, well, because I had that thought, I must not really be the kind of person who should have kids. The only people who should have kids are the ones who are really enthusiastic about the notion of it. And it's like, no, you should. I mean, let's talk about it in terms of career. Like, yeah, I'm sure you've experienced this too. Like, there have been lots of times in my career where somebody has said like, hey, I think you should do this. And I'm like, that seems really scary. Like, I have no idea how I would do that. And the advice I've always been given is like, if somebody asks you to do something you don't know how to do, you say yes and you figure it out. And generally that works out pretty well.
Yeah. I've definitely made it a habit in my, for better, for worse. If somebody asks me to do something, I usually say yes. Yeah. Just because I'm like, I can probably do it.
There's a lot to be said for like building the confidence of like, oh, I don't know how to do that thing, but I'm the kind of person who figures out how to do things.
Yeah, because as you learn to do more things, you learn how to do things.
Exactly. You start, you know, and I think fitness is that way too, actually, where when I was too big to feel confident in exercising, let's say, and of course, John would, I'm sure, be very unconfident. And, you know, if it was like, let's do walks or something, it's like, no, he, you know, I don't think he would feel comfortable doing that. But doing something, doing anything, starts to demystify it to the point of you're like, oh, in 6 months I'll be the kind of guy who can work out, you know, and instead of it being this completely impossible goal. And that's why stumbling blindly towards a goal sometimes is really just exactly what you need to do. You need to go just like, I'm just gonna try this because life is suffering anyhow.
Yeah. And what else are you gonna do?
Yeah, right.
Might as well like feel confident in yourself and do something.
Yeah, well, that's really the path to self-actualization. That's how you know who you are instead of just like, oh, I'll ask other people who the fuck I am.
Yeah. Yeah. I think probably why we get along is that that stuff kind of comes naturally to us, at least maybe not the fitness portion, but
oh yeah, it didn't for me, but it does now, you know,
but in other aspects of our life, I think it does come naturally. And because I don't usually think about it. I can remember a time where I did have to think about it.
Yeah.
And
it's generally unconscious.
And especially when I was younger, I was a lazy person. Mm. So, and I started to do creative things, and I got a lot of positive feedback loops from it. But it took me a lot of effort to start being productive with creativity. I remember
because I
started doing like little animations and stuff. And I remember like it took like a year to get me to even like start something.
Yep.
And then once you get the ball rolling and once you get one thing done, and then you're like, oh, well, that felt pretty good. And it's an ugly animation, but I got it done. you go on to the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. And then, you know, then you just have a craving for it almost.
And even if you're bad, you're at least in some, you know, 90th percentile of people who do it in the first place. Sure. So you're still, you know, you're like, I'm still in rarefied air. I remember, you know, the thing about achievement is that it, at some point it does start to multiply exponentially, because it's the last achievement that enables the next achievement, which enables the next achievement. And I don't just mean like I got a job and that got me another job and that got me another job. I'm talking about the way it makes you feel about yourself, and like you're talking about. I remember being in the middle of making 10 pounds, you know, I'm in high school and I'm like 3 years into making this movie. And by the time you're 3 years in, you're like, oh, I'm finishing this thing or else I'm going to die. Like, there's no way I'm going back. There's no way I'm like, oh yeah, we never finished that. Like, no fucking way. Especially if, like, being a young person, like when you're like young and you don't know who the hell you are yet, you're like, well, this sure seems like one of those times to figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
And completing this or not completing this is really going to define me, at least to myself it will. Am I the kind of person who drops shit, you know? Because I can find an awful lot of those. And I like to think of myself as different. But I remember after finishing that, the next movie, we got it up and running in very little time. We were able to attract talent. You made a movie before this. Okay, cool. Like, everything about it was significant. Like, I think we started writing in like January 06. We started shooting in like January 07, and it was premiering in like July 07. Just like turned it right around, and you know, compared to like a 4-year effort before it. So it's faster, it's better, you know, the first effort, you have to beg everybody to be involved. You're like, right. Like, hey, make my movie with me. You know, so this is ego exercise that isn't very attractive to other people. But then once people take notice of like, oh, that's the kind of person who actually provides a fun experience, or there really is going to be a product at the end of this thing or whatever. Then people are actually like, hey, is there like a role for me in any of this? Like, you know, they're asking you that. So it was advice I used to give to people was like, well, you're going to have to white knuckle through a first achievement, I think, because that will enable all kinds of other stuff.
Yeah, that's completely true.
Yeah.
It's actually true for children too. Like, my second child is way easier. Just because you know what to expect. You're like not looking stuff up. You're just I know generally this is what happens.
I raise kids now.
So it's fine. I mean, sure, there's other aspects that makes raise it. I mean, I think going from one kid to two kids is definitely harder. Yeah. But if you're just like, you're splitting the task between the two kids, it's actually easier.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure at some point it's like, you know, when a company makes a lot of, like, mass produces a product, they're like, oh, okay, now we can yield more productivity with less effort, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. this notion of no finish line, I like it. Because there are times where I think we are like, okay, so like, am I just like totally obsessive compulsive and just not able to enjoy anything I'm doing in the present because I'm just compulsively making the next thing. And it's like, no, it's probably more like you're on a treadmill and you know how important that treadmill is. And you know that if you get off of it, like getting back on it is really hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like, keep it going, keep the productivity up because, you know, especially as you get older, you have kids, you have a job, your days, you know, your 7 a.m. to your 9 p.m. start to look an awful lot alike each and every day. They start to become very repetitive. Like there ends up not being a lot of room for variance in that 14-hour period or whatever. And so that thing you do between 9 p.m. and 11 p.m., you know, becomes like kind of your whole life. Like that's like the little piece you get for you, you know, where you're like, oh, I get to experiment with this time. And it's been a great year for making videos about tree houses or doing the Freddy video or doing the GPDXD or, you know, it's been a cool experience. I really hate to say such a callous thing, but for me, just for speaking purely for me, COVID has been something of a blessing. it's really changed my life and it's allowed for all this cool, enriching stuff that hopefully
will hang out. I definitely like working from home. It's a double-edged sword, obviously, what I talked about where I used to be able to get stuff done my lunch break and I used to be able to get some, but other than that, it's been good. It's been good. What was I going to say? Did I talk about Dr. Sleep in this podcast?
I don't think so, no.
Dr. Sleep, it's a movie that I've watched.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about it just because it's a very interesting movie.
I wish I had watched it.
It's it's based on the Stephen King novel, which is a sequel to The Shining, which is it's a strange thing. Because this movie tries to adapt that book, but also be a sequel to The Shining movie.
Right. Which probably is what I would do if I was adapting it.
Which is different. It's different from the book of The Shining, which I haven't read the book because why bother? I like Stephen King, but I feel like it's one of those things where you read one or two of his books and you're just like, okay, I get it. I get what Stephen King is. A bunch of spooky stuff happens or a bunch of stuff happens and then like a building blows up at the end. That's really what it is. And The Shining is an amazing movie, obviously. It's a movie you would never think should have a sequel. And this movie, I think, accomplishes what it is. Ewan McGregor plays like a grown-up Danny. And
after playing a grown-up Christopher Robin, what the fuck is this?
I know. He's a little typecast, I guess.
This is an interesting pattern.
Yeah, and but he's really good. What I like about it is they do flashbacks and they like recast everybody Wendy like a lookalike for Shelley Duvall and stuff that. But like she actually does a good job. Like she's not like doing an imitation, but she's kind of capturing the essence of the character.
It's cool that they just went ahead and recast it instead of like trying to do any kind of weird CG.
Yeah, because like a bunch of like weird like mannequin people with like weird jello faces that you're
sometimes we have to acknowledge like, hey, we're making art here. Like the audience accepts the fact that like these are characters being played by actors. Like it's okay.
Yeah. And so I like that decision. And the premise is so stupid that it's clearly Stephen King, where Danny, now grown up, he like has fought alcoholism just like his father,
of course,
and kind of the generational thing, you know.
Are they in Maine?
New Hampshire. he starts anew in New Hampshire, and then there's these psychic vampires. This is the stupidest part, but it works somehow. These psychic vampires that prey on people with The Shining. But and so like Danny, along with another little girl who has The Shining that he's like kind of mentoring, of course, fight these psychic vampires. And there's actually some really disturbing parts in this movie.
Wow.
It kind of reminds me of like a straight to Netflix kind of movie in tone, which kind of makes sense because it's the same guy who did Haunting of Hill House.
Okay.
So if you liked Haunting of Hill House, it's kind of reminds me of that, except it's a two and a half hour movie. But it uses the iconography of The Shining. Ewan McGregor is really good in it.
The lawn maze and shit.
Yeah, so the lawn maze is in it, and it uses that effectively. It uses there's a really good scene where he at the end of the movie he returns to the Overlook Hotel because in the movie The Shining it didn't blow up, so
right.
They had to use it. in the book it blows up.
Okay.
And he returns, and his Jack Torrance is kind of trapped in there, and he has a conversation with him. He's a bartender, and so it's really this good scene between.
Here we cast Jack.
Yeah, it's a kind of a lookalike, but again, he's not doing a Jack Nicholson impression. He's kind of capturing the essence. But it's an excellent scene. If you're a fan of The Shining, just watch this. It's good.
Wow.
It pulls it off. It's not amazing. It's good.
The fact that it's just solid and it's just good and it stands on its own two feet is almost like more of an accomplishment than anything else. Because that's a really tough task.
Because you can imagine, like, if I was making this movie, you can imagine, like, oh, Danny's going to be the caretaker of another. you could imagine the scenario where
there's, like, two really hacky options for this. One is to just remake the movie and act like it's a sequel.
Yeah.
It's Danny, so you'll come watch because you recognize the character. Or, maybe worse, try to sequelize it while, like, being overly referential to the first one, so to the point that it doesn't really have its own identity, the Force Awakens kind of situation,
right?
And it sounds like instead they actually just like advance the story, like truly.
Yeah, it's almost like it's kind of like an X-Men movie because it's like it kind of builds on the lore of The Shining, like the abilities. And then you have these psychic vampires that like prey off it, so there's kind of like a villain. So it feels like a weird X-Men movie because there's like confrontations like that.
That's cool.
But it's its own thing. It's its own thing. It's solid. I liked it. It was entertaining, especially, and if you're a fan of The Shining, you gotta watch it.
Well, I think The Shining is amazing, so I'll definitely check it out.
So yeah.
I actually watched two movies as well. Not new ones, mind you, not at all. I watched two very old movies that I had just not seen before. As a longtime Stallone fan, there was always this movie I saw advertised called Over the Top from 1985. It's a fucking arm wrestling movie. And I was like, how come I've not seen the arm wrestling movie by Stallone? And it was just a by the books 80s movie, man. But it was fine. It was good. But he's a trucker who had to leave his family due to the mother's, like his wife's, like mogul father, his like father who was like, he's a damn riffraff or something. Like, so he had to leave. Played by Robert Loggia, of course. And
Robert Loggia.
Whoa, Robert Loggia. Billy. Your mother's right. And then he ends up like getting custody of the kid because the mom is gonna die, and she does die. And the kid hates him because he has been poisoned against him by Robert Loggia. And so he has to spend the whole time, and the kid is like in like military school, and he's like kind of a snob. He's like a rich snob. And so like Stallone as the trucker has to teach him like the ways of the road and to not hate him. And then also he's like a hustler, like arm wrestler on the road as a trucker. And so they end up in Vegas at the end of the movie, winning like an arm wrestling competition. And Stallone's up against, Stallone's like whatever he is, like 5'9" and like kind of slim, but very muscular. And he's up against all these like massive wrestlers and stuff. And but like, you know, he's our hero, right? So like, he's a little bit smaller like us, and so it's just, it's kind of plays on all that macho shit. It's just a fun time. And on the topic of Stallone, actually, I forgot to mention this to you. I have learned that for the 35th anniversary of Rocky IV, Stallone is re-editing Rocky IV from the ground up for a director's cut. Yes, going back to the dailies, back to everything, and making that movie like a modern movie.
What?
Yes, it's all over his Instagram.
For real?
For real.
That sounds fake.
Doesn't it? But when you watch like 7 or 8 different clips he's uploaded to Instagram now, where it's him in the editing room looking at dailies that you've never seen before from Rocky IV ever, of like, you know, Drago having like weird monologues or like moments from the fight. He's talking about how he doesn't like the robot anymore. The robot's gone. like that's what's going on.
This is crazy? Blowing my mind.
It blew my mind too. I guess they're going to market it as like the director's cut of Rocky IV, and it's going to come out sometime next year.
I am excited about that.
I'm really glad you are, because like that's the kind of thing that just gets me wet.
Yeah, that's great, because I unabashedly love Rocky IV, even though it's
so good.
It's like truly even good. The robot, but now he's gone.
You don't like the robot anymore. But I think they, because that movie, as everybody knows, is like 90% montage, and it's relatively short for a Rocky movie too, because they just kind of cut it all down to just the fucking coolest parts. But on the other hand, it's also like there's a lot of synth in it. You know, it's very much like a product of its time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see him try to elevate it from that, you know, if it's even possible. And it's also just like, when can you think of a time when a filmmaker had enough vitality still to 35 years later be like, I think I can make that movie better. 35. Yeah.
That'd be interesting. I'm very, yeah, we'll have to see it. We'll have to see it.
We'll do a commentary track for it. And I watched one other movie. It was when Matt in the snacks video says, have you ever seen the movie The Stuff? And he described to me a movie about basically a fast food monster, this yogurt kind of fluff-a-nutter consistency thing that gets discovered in the Arctic, mass-produced to America, eaten by everybody like zombies, and then they all kind of either die or they become monstrous themselves. I was like, that sounds really fun, especially if it has like 80s, you know, animatronic effects and that sort of thing. Like John Carpenter-ish type effects. And the trailer really looked that way because I had to cut in clips from the trailer into the video. So I was like, I'm going to watch the fuck out of that. That seems really cool. It's not good at all. It's like this actor, Michael Moriarty, who's been in some other stuff, I guess, that's fairly famous. He plays like a private investigator looking into the stuff. There's like a scene of like, I don't know, this kid and his like family. And then it cuts to Michael Moriarty having like a very boring conversation with like, you know, a capitalist or something. Like every other, that's just the format of the whole movie. And then they connect with the military and try to fight off the yogurt. It just gets really stupid. And really, I feel like it fails all of its potential, which is just like, it should be a really great blend of humor and horror. You know, like this, like, we don't even know what's in it. We don't even, all we know is that, you know, you'll buy it and it's tasty, you know, that could be really fun. So much so that I was watching it and I was like, you know what, man, I wonder if the rights to this thing are available. Like, could I remake this thing? Like I would excitedly, it's got a catchy title, The Stuff. I mean, I think people would actually go see that movie maybe.
Yeah, maybe. No, it's, because you could. Yeah, you'd think there would be like a Gremlins 2 kind of vibe. Yeah. It's kind of
but it looks like it aspired to be a little bit that way, but it's just too boring. But there, I'll say this. There's one scene. I've got to figure out a way to like, maybe it's already a meme and I'm just not aware. But I got to find a way to like factor this into a future Box Mag or something. There's a scene where this kid who recognizes very early in the movie. By the way, that's the other problem with the movie, is the narrative structure should be more traditional. Something like, it's really tasty, it's really good, wow, what is this stuff? And that goes on for, you know, there's some kind of like status quo that's then broken by this new product on the market. We get to know some kind of a family, and then things start to get weird and the kid recognizes it, nobody else does. Yeah. That's not what happens. That's what should happen.
Yes.
Instead, in the first minutes, the kid is suspicious because it's moving in the fridge. Mm-hmm. And the family is like, no, it's really good. And they're like eating it. I'm like, did I download like the second half of this movie? And I'm like, this feels like we should have gotten here. Anyway, so the kid is suspicious of it. And he goes to the supermarket. And he goes on a destruction spree. He destroys, you know, he's like nine or something. He's all gangly and shit. And so he like bursts through like a promotional stand of all of it, like in this very like effeminate way. And then like he goes up to like the yogurt aisle and he's just trying to like knock all of it off the shelves. And just, I don't know, it should be a meme of some kind of like rage quitting.
Yeah. Or, yes, you know,
this kind of like very weak attempt at destroying something and nobody really working hard enough to stop it. It's very like, I don't know if they meant for it to be hysterically funny, but it really visually plays hilariously. So I think we got through all of our topics. That was a good one. That was a good podcast.
Yeah. I think we talked about life. We talked about movies. We talked about what we're doing. I think that's what we should do.
That was
the podcast.
The mission of the pod.
That's it. And I think we did. We answered a question.
Right.
So
ask
we
more,
did.
God damn it! Ask more questions.
Yeah, that was the only question. So, and maybe sometime soon we'll do like a hangout at some point. Or
yeah, we could do that. We'll or we could have like a, we got Freddie back on sometime. He's always good for like, because he actually asks really great questions.
That's true. He can be like an audience surrogate.
Yeah, exactly. He digs deep, you know. He's good at picking up on like what's interesting about the personal.
He
wonders interesting things that lead to good conversation.
That's true. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, good all night, right, my friend.
Good night. Wish me luck with this fake 5K I'm running tomorrow.
Oh yeah. Good luck with the fake thing that you just made up. Bye bye.
My parents don't run me into the ground. See ya.
See ya.